May it please the Court. I'm Karen Landau, and I represent the appellant, Noel Mendoza. There are two issues raised by this appeal. First, whether the district court abused its discretion in declining to accept Mr. Mendoza's guilty plea because he wouldn't admit that he was predisposed to commit the offense. And then second, which the second issue may be obviated by resolution of the first, whether notwithstanding that the district court clearly erred in denying a downward adjustment for acceptance of responsibility.
Let me ask you this, Ms. Landau. If we agree with you, what do you want us to do?
Well, if you agree with me on the first. If the court agrees on the first issue, I think the appropriate remedy would be a remand to allow the defendant to replead pursuant to the terms of the original plea agreement under which he would get three levels for acceptance of responsibility.
To vacate the trial?
Vacate the conviction. I mean,
suppose he goes back and says, I've changed my mind, I don't want to plead guilty anymore. How do we prevent that?
Well, that's a good question, and I have to think about the answer for a moment. I think you can remand. I mean, this did come up in the Seventh Circuit case of Rhea Beltran, and I think that you can remand with instructions to vacate the conviction in order to allow the defendant to plead guilty pursuant to the terms of the original plea agreement and be resentenced in accordance with that plea agreement.
Just thinking it through, could we reverse the order of that and say allow him to go back and plead guilty, and if he does, then at that time the trial is vacated so we don't get into a...
Well, I don't know that you can do that. I think the proper remedy is to vacate the judgment of conviction, but certainly you can spell out specific instructions such that if he declines to plead guilty, again, under a valid colloquy, because here, of course, we contend, that would not be answering your question, but I think you can spell it out with particular instructions, just as courts do, for example, when a writ of habeas corpus is issued.
We can't instruct him to plead guilty. I mean, we can...
No, you can't, but you can instruct the court. I guess what you're saying is, and I think you could do this, is you could say you would remand with instructions to vacate the conviction if he is willing to plead guilty pursuant to...
But there would have to be a complete Rule 11 colloquy because it never happened.
That's correct. There would. I think that's right. That's right. Because it was cut off before he ever...
The government suggests a whole other approach, and I think this is why Judge Shulman probably asked the question, and it would be interesting to me to have you comment on it. I mean, they say, well, there was a conviction anyway, and why don't you just drop the count that he wouldn't have pled to and resentence him and just do it that way?
You know, actually, we wouldn't object to that. Well, I think the government's suggestion was different. The government's suggestion was that at most he was entitled to a resentencing.
But dropping the count.
Yes, if the count, that was not how I read the government's brief, and I may have misread
it. She's nodding that is what she meant.
And I may have misread it. And actually, the defendant would not object to that sort of a remedy if it was simply remanded to vacate the one count, and I mean, that would obviously get him what he wants. Mm-hmm. So that would be, yes.
That does the job to vacate the second count, let him get his acceptance of responsibility and recalculate.
That's right. I think that restores him to his original position, and these plea cases have come up in other contexts, too, and that's generally, you know, in the habeas context, it's come up, for example, and that's, it's come up in death penalty cases, and then they've issued the writ in a way that allows the defendant to replead and get the original terms of the bargain.
Mm. Why was your client entitled to present an imperfect entrapment in light of Dickey?
Oh, because he was going to plead guilty? In other words?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's fair to say that, well, again, this is a post-Booker case. So clearly after Booker, regardless of, I mean, there is case law that says, oh, you don't get to raise imperfect entrapment unless you go to trial. And honestly, I'm not really sure how valid that law is. But
we seem to say that pretty clearly in Dickey, and we've repeated it several times.
They do. That's right. And it's repeated in the clause.
So why was this an abuse of discretion in light of Dickey?
Oh,
it looks like the district court was compelled to do this because he can't allow you to do it.
Well, Your Honor, actually, this is a post-Booker. I think if you look at the colloquy, this is a post-Booker plea and sentencing. And clearly after Booker and after Rita and Gall and Booker's progeny, the the guidelines, you know, regardless of the case law that says, oh, you can't raise imperfect entrapment as grounds for a departure after, unless you go to trial, you certainly can raise it as evidence in mitigation. And if you read the plea colloquy in context, what Mr. Furstman was doing is he made a brief statement to the district court, and he said, well, you know, this is what we're going to raise at sentencing. He was sort of saying, look, my client doesn't have a criminal history. He's not a long-term drug dealer.
And he didn't use the phrase imperfect self-defense, as I recall.
He did say imperfect entrapment. Yes.
He did say imperfect entrapment.
He did. It's at ER. If you go to, it's at ER 45, volume 1 of the appellant's. He starts out by saying, he said, you know, he talks about how he's never been involved with law enforcement, you know, basically saying my client has a good character. And then he says, counsel says, I do not believe that the conduct in the instigation of Mr. Faustino, who was the informant, rises to the level of a defense of legal entrapment, a complete defense. But it will be argued for sentencing purposes in terms of mitigation. And then he goes on.
That's what I'm saying. He doesn't use the phrase imperfect self-defense, which I mean, imperfect entrapment,
yes,
which I think is a point in your favor. What he's basically saying is we're going to explain to the court how we got into this mess.
That's right. Yeah. That's right, Your Honor. And I guess, yeah, I obviously didn't quite follow your question. But and I think
is it also true, I think there's some force to your contention that post-Booker, that Dickey seemed to be premised on concerns about downward departures and matters not taken into account by the guidelines. We may be in a different ballpark post-Booker, but we wouldn't have to get to that issue, I take it, because in any event, the judge, if that was the judge's concern, all he had to do was explain it, right? I mean, if he was concerned that, because that's really not part of a Rule 11 colloquy. It isn't that the factual basis was wrong. It's that he might have had something wrong in his head down the line about why he was doing this, and it could have been explained. But it wouldn't, I don't see, I guess my question is, absent such an explanation, why would it be a ground for rejecting the plea?
Well, that's correct, Your Honor. And in what didn't happen here, I mean, I think that there are situations where the judge, if it had gone on, the judge might have been justified. I mean, there are situations I could see where the judge would have been justified in for example, if he went down, if he told the defendant of the elements and the defendant said, well, I didn't intend to commit a crime, then we have a different situation. Or if the defendant couldn't set forth a factual basis that tended to show guilt. But here what he did instead was he made an executive decision that, well, I think you have a plausible defense. You have to go to trial. And that's really not the judge's decision. That's not part of the Rule 11 colloquy.
Do you want to save a couple of minutes for
rebuttal? Yes, sure.
Thank you, Ms. Landau. Good morning.
Please, the Court, Nancy Spiegel for Plaintiff Appellee, United States of America. Your Honors, the district court did not abuse its discretion in refusing to accept the guilty plea. And here's why. I think if you read the colloquy very carefully, what the court heard defense counsel as arguing was that his client had been induced. And the court was, in response, saying, if your client is going to later say that he had been induced, then he'd better right now admit that he was predisposed. Otherwise, he has a complete defense of entrapment, and I can't take the plea.
But that isn't it. He actually said something quite different, though. What he said was, your client isn't willing to say that he was predisposed. That
well,
was
right, but
reason.
In that context, for example, on appellant's excerpt of record, bottom of 46 to 47, the court says, I cannot accept a plea if you are going to argue at this point or at some time later that you were induced into committing the crime by a representative working with the government, because that would rise to the level of entrapment. So basically he's saying you're suggesting now that you're going to come in later and talk about inducement, because defense counsel does say that the CI, I'll give you the exact language. He's saying, but for the imploring and requests of his friend. So,
but he also says clearly, and the defendant says clearly, that I did it voluntarily, and that this, the inducement standard for entrapment purposes is essentially your will was overborne, i.e., you didn't do it voluntarily. So it was quite clear that he wasn't saying that in the technical terms of an entrapment defense.
Okay, well, I think the district court did hear you know, he didn't have the benefit of the transcript to parse out the words, but I think he did hear a suggestion of inducement.
What was the district court worried about? What would have happened had he accepted the plea and then allowed Mendoza to come back during the sentencing phase and say, well, I want to tell you what the circumstances were because I want to be able to explain myself. Okay, what is the district court worried is going to happen at that point?
I think the court is really worried about the validity of the plea. It doesn't want the defendant to come back later and say, look, I didn't like my sentence, and I'm going to now move to withdraw my plea on the grounds that I was really entrapped. And I told you at the plea that I had been induced and I wasn't predisposed, and you let me plead guilty.
And at that point, then the district court has to let him out of his plea because he hasn't knowingly.
Or the judge.
That's not what would happen. The court would say, look.
The evidence is irrelevant. You're not allowed to contradict your plea. So if you have something else in mitigation, put it on. But I'm not going to hear you say you didn't do it.
Right. And you admitted all the elements when you pled guilty. So I'm not going to let you withdraw the plea. So it's really not a fairness to the defendant. I mean, you know, is he going to assert entrapment or not? And I think the court heard evidence that suggested he may have a legitimate defense.
But how
and the
could
court
he
has
have
an obligation
that?
Not I mean, to let him plead under that.
It's, when I go through the poll, I'm going to ask you whether you knowingly and voluntarily participate in criminal activity. Unless you voluntarily participate and acknowledge the fact, I cannot accept the plea. So are you prepared to make such an admission to the court? Yes. So what was he hearing? Where was it? I mean, you can't make up things that it's a figment of his imagination.
Well, it was from defense counsel's remarks.
All right, but this was the defendant, not the defense counsel.
Yes, but he said, the court said very clearly, if he's going to, he, the defendant, is going to take the position that he was induced by the government agent to commit the crime and he was not predisposed to commit the activity, based on that, I can't accept a plea from this man.
Right, and then he goes on and asks him whether that's true, i.e., did you voluntarily participate, and he says yes.
Well, but you can voluntarily participate, you know, in the sense of he knew what he was doing, but he still can come back and argue that he was induced to do that. And he does. He keeps saying, but for the urging and cajoling of the CI, my client wouldn't have done this. And defense counsel never clears it up. He never says, no, Your Honor, we're not going to claim inducement. We're just claiming in mitigation, blah, blah, blah. And so I think the... At the worst case, it was unclear to the court.
He said specifically that the conduct did not raise, the lawyer did, to a level of legal entrapment.
Well, but that's the lawyer's conclusion. I mean, it's for the court in its exercise of discretion to determine, based on the evidence he's hearing at the change of plea, what that conclusion might be. And I think in the court's own mind, he was hearing enough evidence of entrapment.
And he also said for this court to accept a plea, Mr. Mendoza has to admit that he was, in fact, predisposed. That's wrong, right? It's not true that in order for him to accept the plea, Mendoza has to admit that he was predisposed.
Well, that's right. But if he's going to claim inducement later on, then...
That's not later on. I mean, that's what the reason the judge gave for why he wasn't accepting it. He has to admit that he was predisposed. He says he's not going to do that. He says that I can't accept the plea.
Well, but really, I mean, his last comment is, if he's going to say he was induced and he was not predisposed... Then
actually,
I
his last comment is the one I just read you. That was the last comment.
Well, I'm on excerpt of record, bottom of page 50 to 51. He's going to take the position that he was induced and he was not predisposed.
Counsel, what do we do with Dickey? Is Dickey no longer valid because it's a pre-Booker case? It only deals with downward departures under the guidelines?
Well, I think...
What's the government's position?
I think fairly the government's position is that it doesn't apply because we're not in that world anymore. And that defense counsel could argue those factors, you know, in mitigation because the court has much more discretion at sentencing to look at those kinds of factors and consider them. So I don't think that came into play here anyways at all. If the court has no further questions, the government submits on its brief.
Thank you very much, Ms. Spiegel. Ms. Landau, you get the last word.
The government has argued that essentially the defendant, that during the colloquy the defendant was arguing he was induced because there was this but-for language. But I don't think it's a fair reading that but, you know, the term but-for is not co-equal to inducement. You could have, I mean, but-for has this sort of very broad meaning, and, I mean, you can have a completely, you can have a defendant who, I mean, there's but-for, you know, if so-and-so hadn't met somebody else, there wouldn't have been this particular transaction. So, in other words, I just don't think that those, that that works. Again, a fair reading of the transcript is that the defense counsel made clear there wasn't adequate inducement here. I'm willing to submit that.
Thanks very much, Ms. Landau. Ms. Spiegel, thank you also. The case just argued is submitted. Good morning. Zero seven five zero one two three. United States versus Miranda Lopez. Each side has 10 minutes.